Most people listening to this podcast will have considered some form of childcare. Babysitters, childminders, nurseries, nannies, it's a frickin' nightmare. Trying to find someone who's top-notch but flexible is the holy grail. The top-notch people seem to want to work 800 hours a week, and the flexible people, well, one budding babysitter once said to me, as long as you stay in the same room as them, it's okay, isn't it? If you're still looking for the right childcare arrangement, then maybe consider B&Co. They offer a highly individual, first-class service tailored to your needs. Their sitters are all creative people, actors, dancers, artists, which makes for a more engaging, creative experience. One sitter recently helped my kids at bath time, and when I came in the room, they were all pretending to be gorillas. But don't just take my word for it.
I looked after a little girl regularly for B&Co, who became, well, she's our goddaughter and was our flower girl at our wedding, which was really special. Yeah.
That's B&Co, who are offering £25 credit to anyone signing up using the referral code TRAPDOOR2019. Now back to the podcast. Hello and welcome back. This week we have Sarah Camlett, who is a very successful agent to the stars. She will cringe for me saying that, but she represents lots of high profile actors and is the person behind lots of very successful careers. First of all, I need to flag up some occasional technical interference. I've always been very particular about telling people to turn their mobile phones off, because even if it's on silent, it has a horrible little interference. But what I realise is I left my own phone on. So every time you hear that little annoying little noise, which you may or may not hear, but if you do, that is 100% my fault. So apologies. When she came in to talk to me, she told me about the joys of parenting alongside an Alexa.
I'm new to this whole, like, home gadget world. Like, yeah. I've got one in my room and then there's one in the kitchen, so I can, like, page her in the kitchen from the Alexa in my bedroom.
Oh.
Like, come upstairs now, darling. And then it gets a little bit more heated every time.
So you that's a new thing. Is that as a single parent, is that, do you think that that's made your life, has that completely made your life easier?
I don't know if it's a single parent thing. It's, do you know what? I just had a massive...
But it is about hands, like, you talking, like... I know that when David's away, just the juggling of that in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite good to just kind of go, Alexa, page the kitchen, and then say, can you come upstairs now, please?
Yeah.
And she's like, I haven't finished my breakfast yet, mummy. I'm like, hurry up. but the thing, I just had a big house renovation.
Yeah, right.
And I needed some sort of, because I listen to the radio all the time, so I needed something. I was like, oh, I'll just get an Alexa. And then within the first day, Marnie made it meow like a cat and I couldn't turn it off. I don't know how, because, you know, she's four and knows more about technology than I do.
Yeah.
And then I got these little dot things for other rooms, and they just, I mean, it's, I'm sure they're listening to everything I do, but my life's really boring, so crack on, frankly. If you want to listen to the minutiae of, you know, Alexa, add yogurt to the shopping list, then, you know. But do you know what? Look, I'm sure you get this as well, because you've had two children very close in age, mm-hmm. and I've had two children by myself. People say to you all the time, oh, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what do you expect me to do? I could sit in the corner rocking.
Yeah.
Or I could just get on with it. Get on with it. Because actually this was my choice.
Yeah.
As it was with
you.
I chose to do this like a crazy person. But I chose to do this. And so of course you just get on with it.
Yeah.
That's how I do it. Because what else am I going to do?
Yeah. I remember you saying to me, you were one of the very few people, like when I was pregnant, I think. Because I think people, I think maybe I was wondering whether it's a slightly British thing as well about not wanting to, like, very scared about sounding smug. Mm. So you'll tend to kind of moan about things or sort of say, oh, it's a nightmare, oh, you know, how do you do it? And all that kind of thing. And actually, you know, you are one of the few people who have said to me, is actually amazing, and you will do it, and it will be okay, and no one really tells you that. Mm. And that's true as well, I think.
It is true. I now, having had another one, I'm questioning that because I'm finding it really hard.
Yeah,
but it's awful because I've, you know, having my daughter was not easy, but it was lovely.
Yeah.
And she was delightful all the time. And people would sort of be like, oh, and I would look at them and think, it's nice.
Right.
But now I get it because it's
now you're like,
and she was just an easy child.
Right. So you've got a slightly more challenging child. And there's two.
And there's two. Yeah, so, you know, when you have one, you have nothing to do all day. You don't have to get up and do anything. No. Okay, maybe you have to get up and go.
And when they sleep, you get a break. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to get up in the morning and take her to school.
Yeah.
So if he's been up all night, I can't just fall back to sleep at 7:30 and sleep for a couple of hours.
No.
And I have to pick her up. And the day is so short when you have to pick someone up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But anyway, but yesterday I took him to Heartbeeps, which was the first baby class he's ever been to. And I was like, you don't need this. These are other babies. This is what they look like. And we're lying there and he was loving it. And he's giggling. It's very sensory. And I was like, And then she brought out the bubble machine. And I suddenly had this pang of, oh my God, this child is 5 months old and he has never seen a bubble.
Oh.
But I felt awful.
Why though?
I don't know. Because when it's your first...
That's
you have
true.
Your NCT gang, which I didn't have. And you're doing the things, so you go to all the groups and the baby massage and, you know, library rhyme time and and you do all these things. He just gets carted around.
Yeah,
you know.
But then he will. I really think he will benefit from that in another way. I think my daughter is much more resilient because of that.
Yeah.
Because she sort of had to. I think, I wonder if that's the thing. He might have lost out on some things, but he's gained in other ways.
And, you know, it's fine that you don't see a bubble until you're 5 months old, because if I asked him today, how did you feel about those bubbles?
Yeah.
He said, I don't think he'd have any response.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was just that sort of thing of, like, it's so different the second time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really wasn't prepared for it. And I don't think I underestimated how hard it would be and how different it would be, actually.
Yeah.
Because... And we should probably talk about it in a bit more, but I've got a gang of friends that I've made who are also solo mums.
Mm.
And I'm the only one that's had two.
Right.
And everyone, you know, a lot of them have sort of said, oh, you know, how is it? I'm like, it's really hard, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, it will get easier as
you
get older.
Yeah, it will.
But I definitely underestimated how hard it was going to be.
I think it is... I mean, I think having two kids is, most people would say, is just so much harder than having one.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, I mean, I'm definitely finding now that mine enjoy each other's company so much, you know, they really play together and have fun together. Mm. And you sort of think, I was with a friend recently who has one child and... I remember thinking, oh, yeah, she's much more involved with that child than I am because, you know, my kids can play together.
Yeah.
So I can sit on the sofa
and what's
my
lovely
phone.
With yours is because they're close in age, they'll probably have similar interests.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. But even so, yours are still going to, they're not miles apart in age.
No.
So they'll, you
and
know.
And it's lovely, you know. Marnie walks into the room and his face lights up, you know, and she's wonderful. It's a great age gap because she can go and get things for me and be involved, but also she's quite independent.
Yeah,
so if I have to sort of stop and feed him or whatever we need to
do. You can explain that to her as well.
She understands it.
Yeah,
she can then say to me how she's feeling, which is also really nice.
Yeah.
And it's very sweet. Like, she just sings songs to him all the time about, you know, oh, I'll always be your big sister and I'll always love you. And I'm like, oh, you won't. But
for sure. Let's go with that for now.
That's so nice. Boo!
So take me back to your decision in terms of having Marnie in the first place.
Okay. Well, I So lots of my friends from home, you know, my kind of old friends, they're not old, but, you know, I've had for a long time. The majority of them got married and had children when we were all in our sort of late 20s, early 30s. And there was no great coincidence when my sort of two of my best friends were pregnant and I got a dog. And at that point in my life, I was not, you know, I was very single, happily so, travelling, working, doing lots of fab, fun, brilliant things, and was delighted because I got to be like the cool favourite auntie.
Yeah.
And still, you know, these kids who are now coming up to leaving junior school and going to senior school still call me Auntie Sarah, which is one of my favourite things to hear, you know. And I feel like it's a really special relationship with your kind of best friend's kids, because you've held them since they were babies, and you hope that you'll always be there for them if they need another kind of adult or,
I think, and I think also with, I have that with some of my friends' kids and also my nieces and nephew, and there's something very precious about your relationship with kids before you have kids, because you have got the time and the energy to be cool and fun.
Absolutely.
Which now, I absolutely do not.
And also, they're just all future babysitters, which is
brilliant. Yes, that's also true,
And so, you know, and so that was all happening, and, you know, friends are having kids, and I was just having a brilliant time and, you know, really living, you know, as much as I could, and travelling and just having a great time. Yeah. And then I think it must have been when I was about 35 or 36, these things happened that were completely unrelated to each other, but that really started to penetrate into my consciousness. I was having lunch with a woman in our business who I really admire, I've known for a long time, and we were having lunch, and she just said to me, sort of out of nowhere, I need to say something to you. And I was like, okay. She said, my greatest regret in life was never having children.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And we sort of talked about that a bit. And then he was moved on to something else. And But I kept thinking about it and thinking, I wonder why she said that to me at that moment. And then time passed and someone else similarly said something along the same lines, which was, you know, like, don't leave it too late. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm not really in that place because I'm going off to this film festival. And then, so you'll know this because you've just recently got a dog. I had dog friends. So where I lived, you'd walk the dog at the same time every day or weekend or whatever, and you'd have this little gang of dog friends. And there was one woman who was one of my dog friends, and she'd recently adopted a child. Right. And we were chatting, and it was so exciting, and I was sort of asking her about it. And she said, you know, I love this child, so, you know, full of love and joy that I've got her. But I wish I'd tried to have a baby on my own.
Wow.
And suddenly all these little conversations started just really penetrating. And I thought, okay, I think I was coming up to 36.
Yeah.
You need to stop and think about this now. And I really live in the moment. Like, I'm not someone that dwells on the past. I don't really think about the future very much. But I had to stop and go, okay, what do you want?
Yeah.
Because your career is in a great place. It's really fun. You're, you know, doing all these amazing things. But none of this is what's going to look after you when you're old. You know? And I started really thinking about what would life be like if I never had children. And actually, it suddenly became really apparent that that just wasn't an option for me. It wasn't a, like, wake up in the morning and be overwhelmed with this maternal urge to procreate. But I just was like, oh, no, that can't. That's not an option for me. I've got to be a parent. And I'd been dating for years on and off, and it was miserable, you know, meeting guys that were perfectly nice. I don't want to go out with someone who's perfectly nice.
No.
I want someone who, you know, I'd like to go out again with another time, which didn't happen, or, you know.
It's also very hard, I think, to have that realization, because I had that realization before I had kids, you know, and I wonder whether there is, few people have talked about there being a kind of moment where you kind of go, or a series of moments where you're like, no, this is definitely what I want to do. And I wonder if there's something, not hormonal, but there is something, a part of, like, you know, your body kind of going, do you know what? Yes, you're having a great time, but you probably need to, like, let's just push this to the top of the pile of things in your head, 100%. Kind of thing.
But I
remember thinking, yeah, having that feeling, and having that feeling when you're not in a relationship and not with somebody who could even be, yeah, you're just like, well, I don't want to. If I'm looking at relationships, if I'm looking at guys now as fathers, that's pretty full on.
Really,
if I can't find a guy for a relationship, then it's harder to find one I want to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd sit across the table in some pub or wherever with someone I've just met, and I'm looking at them thinking, oh no, you're not the father of my children, which is mental. Mm. Or you start doing maths. So you go, okay, so we'd go out for a year or maybe two and get married, maybe. So if I'm going to have a baby with you, then we're 38, 39, or I don't know.
It's like the Friends, the thing in Friends, isn't it, where so when Rachel turns 30 or something.
And they say, well, you know, if we're not married by then, we'll, you know.
Yeah, and they kind of do the maths and they work out, or maybe she's not even 30. Mm. And she was like, yeah, I mean, I'd like to have kids around, you know, around 29, 30. And they're like, you're 27 now. Even if you met someone tomorrow and they went, da-da-da, you would be 33 before you, whatever. She was like, you know.
So I sort of started doing a bit of research, really. And as the more I thought about it and started reading about it, the more I was convinced that I was going to have a baby by myself. I'm an only child. I'm very independent. You know, all the things that I've achieved have been obviously with support, but have been, you know, me. And it just all started to feel like this was definitely the right thing to do. And I remember sitting down with my parents and sort of saying, look, I've got something to say.
Yeah.
And I think at first they were a little bit taken aback and they, you know, can't you just go and find a boyfriend? And I was like, well, no, I've been trying that. It's not really working. And once they understood where I was coming from, they were 100% behind me, and they are to this day. They're amazing. So I went to my GP and talked to her about it, and she's retired now. It's wonderful, kind of everything you want from a sort of family GP. It's an older woman, really knowledgeable, very understanding, and she said, you know, can you recommend anyone? And she said, well, I've seen this doctor give talks, and I think he seems quite impressive. So I was like, fine, I'll go and see him.
Yeah.
And you have this fertility sort of MOT.
Right.
And the results came back, and they were not terrible, but not amazing.
Right.
And then one of my best friends had broken up with her girlfriend, and they were going to the Maldives. And I was like, I'll come.
Yeah.
So replaced the ex, and she and I went off to the Maldives at Christmas. And we had this holiday where both of us had a lot to think about.
Yeah.
And it was great to be with someone that, you know, we could just talk and talk and talk and talk and thinking. And it really kind of made me think. And I would sit and think about scenarios.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so on the days when I go to work and then I have a press night, what would I do if I had a baby on that day?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Which is what I used to do before I got a dog as well. What would I do with a dog that day?
Yeah.
And you just sort of start imagining, well, what would my life be like if I had a child? And every scenario made me feel happy.
Yeah, you were like, I could do that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So I came up from the Maldives feeling like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to do this, but when? And then I had this 2 months of absolute insanity. I had a client in a really big film, and we did lots of travelling and junkets and film festivals and things, and had this sort of crazy lost weekend at the Berlin Film Festival. And drank lots and did things, you know, that I probably shouldn't have done. And then it was like, got that out of my system.
Yeah.
I needed to go a bit mad.
Yeah.
Because now I'm going to knuckle down and do
that.
And so I went back to see my lovely fertility doctor, and we got the ball rolling.
So how long between you sort of thinking, yeah, maybe I want to have kids, or I definitely want to have kids, to that point?
Probably the best part of a year.
Because
also I had a lot going on, because, you know, life is very busy, and I think when you're single and you're living, you know, a certain lifestyle in, you know, showbiz, you're just out all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
My whole diet consisted of just canapes, you know.
And at like 10:30, you know, like...
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Sort of like starving.
Absolutely.
And then suddenly a load of canapes.
Exactly. I mean, you know, when I first started in my, you know, early mid-20s, I used to get home at 5 a.m, yeah, sleep yeah. for an hour, get up, have a shower and go to work, and I was
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
But... You know, life was happening.
I had that recently with our nanny, who is just lovely and amazing and 21 and very brilliant and responsible and wonderful. And but she had, there was some situation that meant, and it wasn't that she was out drinking or whatever, but she was out really late and she came to look after the kids for a couple of hours at the weekend and she hadn't slept. And I was like, oh my God. More for her, like,
yeah.
oh my God, I mean,
mad.
Who would want to do that? I was like, I'm so, you know, are you all right? Oh my God, that's horrendous. And David just looked at me and went, she's 21.
Mm. Like, also,
she can do that.
I imagine.
You obviously can't. Yeah,
but also,
so,
you
like,
probably looked
down.
After your children having not had a
Yeah, that's
fever.
True, that's true. But anyway, sorry. You were...
So, yes, so I went back to see my doctor and then it's a case of, okay, the next big job is to find...
Yeah.
Sperm donor, which is really weird. Really weird. And it is a bit like...
Internet
weird
dating.
Weird internet dating.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine has done it as well.
Yeah.
And she, yeah.
It's I mean, it's... You have to really kind of get your head in around it. And what was interesting for me was when I started looking...
What do you see, just for people who don't...
So, okay. Well, so you have choices. There are very few sperm donors in the UK because of... the law, and from what I understand, you don't get very much information about them.
Right.
So I didn't want to look in the UK.
Yeah.
So the next place that most people then go is Denmark, where there's a big... I say go, you don't go there, you just go online.
Yeah.
So there's the European Sperm Bank. But I decided quite early on, which took me slightly by surprise, that I wanted to have a Jewish donor.
Yeah.
Because I'm Jewish. I'm not particularly religious, but as I started looking through the profiles, it something inside me just said, this feels like the right thing to do for you.
Also, like, if you were going to choose... If you're essentially choosing, not randomly, but you're not choosing someone's personality, then you kind of... I totally understand that.
It was a really guttural feeling that I had. So then the natural step was America.
Yeah.
And there are quite a number of sperm banks in America.
Right.
And I remember there was one donor that I found that I really liked the look of. And I contacted the sperm bank and the ad, so that you can only have a certain amount of families per country that can use that donor.
Right.
And they just had their last allocation in the UK, so that donor was no longer available to me.
Right.
And I was like, oh, because the Jewish donors were quite few and far between. But it just shows that everything happens for a reason.
Yeah,
really, because
that
obviously wasn't meant to be you know, the right one. So it is like internet dating in that you sign up to the websites and you pay, I guess it's like a monthly subscription.
Yeah.
And you can put in all different criteria.
Yeah.
So you can put in religion or ethnicity, hair colour, eye colour, height, you know, all those sorts of things. Appearance was never something that really bothered me at all.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It was more about the essence of this human being.
Yeah.
And the sperm bank that I ultimately used was amazing. I've got so much information about him. And not just, I mean, obviously all the health stuff, which is really important, his health and his family's health, but also there's the reflections on someone from the sperm bank that interviewed him. So they write a little paragraph about what they made of him. And the thing I've got, which is really amazing, is an audio interview with him.
Wow.
Where they would just ask him random questions.
Yeah.
And he talks about memories and family and things. And you can sort of tell what kind of person he is.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of things in his profile that really resonated with me. Similarities with our families. And there was one thing in particular. And I was just... It just suddenly was like, oh, this is definitely the person.
Yeah.
You can have a photo... Well, again, it's different sperm banks and different donors, I guess... decide what they want to give, but I've got a photograph of him probably when he's about 4 or 5,
right,
which in hindsight I think is a bit strange, because Marnie knows that, you know, a man in America did a kind thing and let mummy have his seed so that I could make a baby. As and when she wants to when she's ready and old enough and wants to see this,
she'll
details,
expect to see a picture of a man. Yeah, yeah.
A child. Yeah. So that's, at the time, it felt great, but now I think about it, that's quite a strange concept. Yeah, so I don't know how we'll tackle that later on. And then you phone them and you order sperm. Wow. And I remember having a brand new Amex card because I thought, oh, I'm going to spend quite a lot of money here, so I'll get my air miles.
Yeah.
And phoning Amex and saying, I know I've just got this card. There's going to be quite a big transaction on it. It is genuine.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want them to be like, oh, this is strange.
Yeah.
And so I ordered 6 vials of sperm and had them shipped over from America, and into the freezer they went. I like to imagine they were sort of nestled in between some fish fingers and a Viennetta.
Yes.
And then it's just, you know.
And then you're doing IVF.
I did IUI with Marnie,
right,
which is just insemination. So I had the drugs that you'd have for IVF, which stimulate your ovaries and then stop you from ovulating. So they stimulate your ovaries and get them all, I don't know, plump and juicy.
Yeah.
but you don't ovulate until you have a trigger injection. And then you have a period of time within that when they do the procedure, because then you're ovulating.
Right, right.
And it is as close as you can get to kind of turkey baster.
Yeah, right, right.
And again, because my doctor is so amazing, he put the scanner on. So I saw swimming into my cervix. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, not into the egg, but obviously just in it was into my uterus. It was amazing. And the first time didn't work. And I remember...
And how did you feel after that?
Well, do you know what? I didn't expect it to.
Right,
okay. But I was in Canada on business, in a hotel room, and I woke up and, you know, got my period and I was really upset.
Yeah.
Because even though I thought, you know, I've been on the pill for years and years and years, I've never been pregnant, my body may not know what to do.
Yeah.
And you sort of tell yourself all these practical things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was upsetting. Yeah. But then, you know, and then we just got on and did it again straight away, like the next month.
Yeah.
And it worked, which was amazing. And I remember standing on the balcony. So we've got a little balcony outside my office, and my phone rang and it was my doctor, and I ran outside into the balcony and he told me. And I remember standing sort of in this brick pillar between the two office windows so no one could see me, and just like crying.
Aww.
And then phoned my mum. And then you have this, you know, the typical 12 weeks of abject fear.
Yes.
I just woke up every morning thinking, well, I'm sure I've had a miscarriage.
Yes, and you have to kind of, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because you don't want to sort of bond with the idea of being a parent.
But you can't help it.
Yeah, but you can't help it.
And I spent the whole time looking at every single woman I went past thinking, are you secretly pregnant? Are you secretly pregnant?
Wow,
and you put your hand on your stomach without realising.
Yeah.
But when you go to cross the road, and all these little things, and you have to sort of, And then the best thing was telling people, because no one knew.
Yeah.
And the reactions were hilarious.
And did you tell people after 3 months or after 12 weeks?
No, I waited until I was about 15 weeks because I got through the first 12 weeks and then I felt like I could relax a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it felt like, okay, well, I've got through that and I just want to enjoy it for a little while before I start telling everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, so I have two wonderful, wonderful people that work for me. And I'd been off for a week and I said to them, you know, I'm back on Monday, let's go for breakfast and have a little catch up. And I told them, and Erin, my assistant, just burst into tears. And then I went into the office to tell everybody. And it's just that thing of people's faces are like, oh, what? With who? And one of my clients, and I'll never forget it, so he's got 3 grown-up children. And I remember him saying, oh, I didn't even know you were courting. I was like, well, I'm not.
Welcome to the 21st century.
But what was amazing is that all I've had is positivity.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know what people say behind my back. It's not my business. But to my face, all I've had is positivity.
Yeah.
And people being so fascinated, encouraging, excited.
Yeah.
And I think... I was a bit worried about maybe some of my parents' friends who might be a bit older.
It might be
a bit
difficult for them to digest.
But everyone's just embraced it so much. And I think because I'm a very independent person, I've always really stood on, you know, my own 2 feet. I think people just, you know,
I just
knew
think
I wouldn't
amazing.
Have done it rashly.
It's an amazing sort of, I guess we're in an amazing point in sort of in terms of science that, you know, when I was growing up, there would be people, my mum would say things like, you know, about, she said it's very sad they couldn't have children, or she couldn't have children, she would have made a good mum. You know, there was, that was very much a narrative that I remember growing up. And then as a child, you sort of felt sorry for these women, and, you know, and that actually you realise as you get older that there's a kind of, there was definitely a sort of, you know, there's that awful thing of sort of men, oh, not all men, obviously, but, you know, some blokes kind of making the comment of, and I remember a friend of mine's boyfriend sort of going, oh, you know, we were in our late 20s and he was in his 30s, and he was like, oh God, you know, I'd never go out with a girl in her 30s because all she wants to do is have kids. And you're like, yes, but also, A, that's probably not the case, and B, she kind of has to be thinking about that around then, because that's her last chance to do it. Exactly. So fuck you. So the fact that then that's kind of taken out of that, you don't have to make that compromise, or, you know.
It's, look, for me, there were a number of different options. It was don't have kids, which wasn't an option.
Yeah, right.
Meet someone that will do.
That would just,
and have children with them. I didn't want to do that.
No.
Go and get pregnant by some stranger, you know, drunkenly, which I wouldn't have done.
No.
So it was sort of the only option for me. And the most, you know, this is a child I'm bringing into the world potentially.
Yeah.
And I've got to sit down one day and explain to them what I did and why I did it.
It's very important.
And and I feel very confident that I'm bringing up two very happy, loved, balanced children.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always, always talked to Marnie about how she came into the world, because it's really obvious that she hasn't got a daddy. She knows she hasn't got a daddy. But I said to her, so she's starting a new school in September, and I said to her the other day, if, you know, your friends at school ask you, you know, why you haven't got a daddy, what would you say? And she said, Mummy didn't find the perfect person to be my daddy, so she had me by herself.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, isn't that that's just really wonderful? Good. And that's true.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely true. And it's hard, isn't it? Because actually, that question is the thing that you're... I mean, I remember us being out and older children asking her where her... You know, that is the question that as soon as you can talk, kids are going to be asking her.
Yeah.
So having that answer nailed is
And it's
pretty...
really important that she doesn't get that question and fall to pieces.
Yeah, no, exactly. That she's proud of it, that's her, like, unique thing kind of thing. Yeah.
We met her new teacher, and she'd said something about, oh, you know, do you help Mummy and Daddy with the baby? And Marnie just looked at her and went, I haven't got a daddy. I laughed in her face and then ran off to go and play. And this teacher sort of looked at me and I was like, so we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, I've got
some leaflets to give you.
Yeah.
But there's this great organisation called the Donor Conception Network who support all parents and children who have had any sort of donor conception. So whether it be a straight couple that have had to use sperm or egg donors, same-sex couples, single women, single men, I guess. And they do these workshops where you kind of, it's all about talking, and they call it talking and telling. So it's all about, you know, how the language to use around your children.
Yeah,
so
right.
rather than saying a kind man, you say a man did a kind thing.
Why is that?
Well, because we don't know if he's a kind man.
Right. Gosh.
We don't know him. We may never meet him. We might, but we don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And what you don't want to do is have your kids kind of have this person on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And I think things like the nuance of that's really important.
Yeah.
And when you're around people, and look, people want to ask me questions about it all the time, and I'm very open because I think it's important to be.
Yeah.
But people will say, you know, oh, what colour hair has their dad got? I'm like, no, it's their donor.
Yeah.
Not their dad.
It's very clear.
And that's very important as well, that everyone around them understands and uses that language. And also that going back to my friends' kids who obviously are all older, it's funny how it's taken them quite a long time to ask the question. I remember my best friend saying to me, you know, her daughter had just one day sort of said, why hasn't Marnie got a dad? It's like, have you only just noticed? Did you think he was just at work all the time?
Yeah.
You know, and also I think really challenging the norms that people come out with.
Yeah.
We were with some friends of my parents, and he said, I don't remember what we were talking about, and he said something, it was a cartoon character or something, and he said something like, you know, everyone's got a mummy and a daddy. And I looked at him and went, well, no, they haven't. And he was so embarrassed. I was like, it's fine, but you have to
change that narrative. Yeah.
And when Marnie's teacher sort of said that to her, she said, I'm so sorry, you just assume that it's a mummy and a daddy. And I was like, well, but those are the assumptions that we have to try and change. And what's been lovely, so when I was thinking about trying to have a baby by myself, one of my friends had a friend who had done it.
Right.
And I sort of said, would you ask her? I'd met her once or twice. Would you ask her if I can talk to her about it? And she sort of became my baby guru.
Yeah.
And we're really close friends now. And she had someone that was the same thing to her. And we sort of created this network of women who have all had babies by themselves. And we've got this WhatsApp group. I think there's like 25 of us on this WhatsApp group.
I really want to tell my friend about this then, because there's got a great friend who's got a little boy who,
And there's, you know, there's Facebook groups for women. Yeah. And in fact, weirdly, I was on a Facebook group and someone had said something about, you know, where they lived. And I was like, oh, I live there too. And we sort of chatted on, you know, instant messenger and said, oh, we must meet up for a coffee. And then a few Saturdays ago, Marnie was at ballet and I went to just get a coffee and Grayson was asleep in the pram. And, you know, someone said, oh, how old's your baby? I said, what's his name, Grayson? She went, are you Sarah? And it was this woman that I'd been talking to online, and we went out for lunch 2 days ago. And she lives two streets away from me.
Wow.
And she's got a little baby that she's had by herself. It's so, there's so many women doing
it. You know the kind of, the whole, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, blah, blah. And I wonder if, when you're in a relationship, it's easy to become a little cocooned. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're on your own, you have to ask for help.
Yeah, and that's
so
really hard.
You need your community, and that's really hard. But you just kind of have to do it. So actually, I wonder if, in a strange way, that kind of like means that you're more outward thinking and you're more you're more part of a community.
Yeah, maybe. I also think it's a really unique experience.
Yeah,
and it's important for the children to have other kids that
feel the only ones. Yeah.
But I remember saying to this friend who was my sort of mentor, you know, I don't know what to do about NCT. I don't think I'm going to do it because we're all couples. And she said, no. She said, all the husbands go back to work after 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just the women.
Yeah.
And that was such a lifeline.
Yeah.
And we would sit in the pub, all of us, breastfeeding or bottle feeding, just all over, you know, nursing a coffee. And that's been weird the second time, is not having
that.
People around me that are doing it at the same time. Yeah. Because it's great when you've got friends that have got kids, but they don't remember what it was like when the 4 month sleep regression hit.
No,
you know?
Exactly, yeah.
And having people that are doing it the same time as you just makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Weekends are tricky, I think, sometimes when you're a solo parent. Especially, I remember with the NCT kind of gang, the weekends it was like they were off with their husbands and their family.
But you know what, as well, I find that because David works a lot at the weekend and he's away a lot, and I find myself sometimes feeling quite resentful about it, because you sort of think, I need help at the weekends too, like I need to be doing stuff, and I'll suggest things, and it just goes people are a bit like, no, this is when we see our
family time. I don't know, it's the best decision I ever made, obviously.
Yeah.
And then I thought I'd try and do it again, which was mad, really.
And did you use the same guy?
I did use the same donor. I wouldn't have done it without the same donor.
Right, yeah.
So I'd bought 6 vials of sperm.
Yes, you'd use two.
I'd use two, yeah. So it took, and this time I had IVF, and it was, I won't go into why, but there was a whole thing that happened, and I had to have IVF in the end, which is a whole
more
thing. Oh, wow.
Much more invasive.
Yeah, and, it's really hard. But that worked, which was great.
And did that work first time?
It did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was amazing.
So you could have 3 more children.
No, thank you. No, I've actually just told them...
What are you doing sitting here?
I've just told them to defrost what's left. Everything is gone. No, I'm done.
Yeah.
Definitely done. Much too old. But having 2 by myself is definitely different and much more of a challenge. And I think also because he doesn't sleep, it feels even more kind of raw and real. But you know, my mum is their second parent. Right, you know, my mum was my birth partner. She cut both their cords.
Wow.
She handed them to me.
Oh.
You know, she is amazing.
And do they
so
live
lucky.
Nearby?
Really nearby.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, having that support in every way, you know, not just helping with the kids, but that, you know, I mean, I speak to my mum on the phone about 8 times a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, she'd have left my house and an hour later I'm on the phone to her.
Yeah, yeah.
She, you know, I imagine when you're in a couple, I'm sure this is the case, your child will do something and you phone them or you WhatsApp them or you send them a picture. Da, da.
Yeah.
So that's my mum. That's the person who I,
she
gets bombarded daily with, you know, all the things that they're doing. But you need someone to be that person.
Of course you do.
You know, to celebrate all their little things with.
And also just to kind of, like, kind of go through the kind of work through, you know, sometimes I just need to kind of, out loud, I need to kind of go work through stuff. You go, do we do this or do we do that? Or do we do that till next week or blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely.
You know, boring shit that you don't necessarily want to be like offloading on your friends,
totally.
But you do need to work it through with someone who's got skin in the game too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also I think when you are massively sleep deprived, you question your own judgment all the time.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So when we went to see this paediatrician, I was like, can you come with me? Because I don't trust myself to remember all the things that I want to say. But I feel very lucky. And, you know, friends of mine who have done it by themselves haven't had that. You know, they haven't had parents around or they've been, and that, I can't imagine, you know, that I guess you just have to pay for help.
Yeah,
And but it is hard. And I think most of the women that I know who have done it are, by nature, very independent women, and asking for help is hard.
Yeah.
You know, really hard.
Well, it's sort of, it's a very independent thing to do, isn't it? Which
yeah.
is taking control and kind of going, actually, I'm not going to wait around for something to happen that may never happen. I'm going to do this myself. So, yeah, the asking for help thing is a fucking
really
nightmare.
And also going from being really, really sociable and out all the time to having a baby asleep upstairs every night.
Yeah.
That took a lot to get my head around. And I remember saying to a couple of friends, like, you need to come round to my house in the evening.
Yeah.
I'll cook for you or we'll just make tea, but I need you to
come. I need
come.
Company. Yeah.
And I think that is, it can be quite isolating.
Yeah,
I mean, I tend to, when I'm back at work, I work in the evenings and, you know, I've got always something to do, but there are moments when I suddenly realise that I've not seen anyone.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
outside
totally,
of work or
totally.
and that's important. And I think that's quite a hard thing to do as well, is to kind of say to someone, I need you.
Yeah.
And you're out doing all these great, fantastic things, if you know, you don't have kids or your kids are older so they're quite self sufficient or whatever. But actually, can you just come round to my house at 8 o'clock and have a cup of tea with me?
Yeah.
Because I just need that interaction.
Yeah.
And social media makes that less difficult, I think.
Yeah,
because you
exactly.
always feel connected to somebody.
Yeah.
But that, I think that's something I have struggled with. And, you know, not going to the theatre.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go to the theatre whenever I wanted, to see anything I wanted. And now people say, oh, did you see it? I don't know. I'm going to see Hamilton on Monday. I haven't seen it yet. I'm like the only person. I know!
What?
The only person in London that hasn't seen it. Because I could have gone to see it.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah.
But that's one night that I don't get to see Marnie, and I'd rather put Marnie to bed.
Yeah. Of course.
You know?
Of course. Yeah.
And that's the sort of, that's the big, the switch out.
Yeah.
Is, you know, of course I could go and spend my Saturday doing both Harry Potters, but I've got to take Marnie to ballet.
Yeah.
And that's my, you know, my weekends are my time with her and him now.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things like that you have to kind of, I've accepted and just gone, okay, you haven't seen the Harry Potter.
Is it
the worst thing that's ever happened to you? No, it's fine.
Exactly.
Someone said to me the other day, oh, did you get tickets to see Barbara Streisand? And I'm like, no, I've got 2 babies.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
But I don't think
my
screaming 5-month-old is going to be
able to
come
with me. It's going to be
into
it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's a balance. Someone was talking recently about, you know, saying, you know, I'm the same person, I'm still the same person, and I was like, you're not the same person.
You're not.
You know, I know what that means in a sense, which is like, I guess there's a part of you that mourns. I had a friend who, Fergus Craig, in fact, he's now lives in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and he was back for a wedding, and so we went, he used to live in Camberwell, I live in Brixton, and we write together quite a lot, and we would just kind of go, oh, do you want to meet in the pub? And we just have a pint. I mean, I never go to pubs just for a drink. I mean, I never go to pubs anymore anyway, but I certainly don't just go...
Unless it's for a party that they've hired the upstairs for at like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, exactly, yes. So it's like, so he was in London last night, so I got a babysitter and I went and we went to the pub just for a pint. I was so excited going in. It was so lovely. Yeah. And it was, and there's a, you know, as I was walking down the street to this pub I used to always go to with Daisy and stuff like that, it was a real kind of, and I felt very sentimental, you know, about my younger days and all this kind of thing. And it was a feeling of, was a, I guess a slight feeling of loss of like, I used to do this all the time, this is my life, it's so long ago since I've done it. But I don't want to be doing anything else. No, like, I wouldn't change it for the world.
I had to go to Los Angeles, not last year, the year before, for a week on business. And I was beside myself. And I'd been, I think I'd been to New York a couple of times, but only for like one night or two.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was really nervous about it. I didn't want to leave Marnie. And, you know, until she started school, Marnie was with my mum 2 days a week anyway. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like I'm leaving her with grandparents she doesn't know.
No, exactly. You know. She's going to be fine, yeah.
And I remember sitting on the plane and as it took off and just going, oh, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. And I had such a good time. Yeah. I didn't have to worry about babysitters.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, I had one of my best friends lives in LA. We went out for dinners.
Yeah.
It just...
You could just like, be...
You know, and I'd FaceTime her. She didn't want to talk to me.
No,
I remember one time we were FaceTiming and she just wanted to show me a flashing light on my dad's printer. I'm like, can we go now? Thanks, babe. But I did go into that stupid American doll shop. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
and spend, like, more money on a doll and pyjamas than I'd spend on pyjamas for myself.
Yeah.
Which Marnie has no interest in at all.
Yeah.
Elsa.
Yeah.
It's sort of mum guilt. I was like, I have to buy her the best doll ever. But it was good for her. You know, it was healthy, actually. Yeah, and I came back feeling quite refreshed. She barely noticed I was gone, you know, and it was absolutely fine. But when you were saying about, you know, your identity, I remember before I went back to work the first time, my mum had Marnie and I went to Westfield. I remember standing in Zara, looking around me, and everything on the rack may have been, as well have been fancy dress.
Yeah,
I was like,
I
don't know what to wear anymore.
That's such a good point. Yeah, I felt
I'm
that
not
too.
The person I was when I went on maternity leave. Well, actually, in the run-up to that, I was wearing disgusting maternity clothes. So
So that's, exactly,
My body's changed. I was still breastfeeding.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got really upset and I like, cried in Westfield. Because I was like, looking around and thinking, I don't know what this person wears anymore. No. Who is she? And going back to work, and it took me a long time to sort of get into my stride this new person. And I hate that thing that people say, where they sort of say, well, you know, when you're at work, you have to pretend you don't have kids, and when you're at home, you have to pretend you don't have a job. Do you not
hear
that?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I talk about my kids all the time at work because I'm a human being.
Yeah.
And being a mother has actually made me better at my job.
Yeah.
It's made me prioritise. It's made me work much more efficiently. I'm not going to pretend that I don't have children. Be in, you know, it's so irritating. And,
also in this day and age, it's important to have that for other people to see that, you know, male and female around you to see that functioning quite well. Mm-hmm. Like, if we don't want the population to die out,
well, exactly.
We have to find a way to do it.
It does, you know, being a parent has enriched my life in a way that I never imagined or expected. And to sort of think that you then go to work and just ignore, you know, pretend it doesn't exist. I'm like, well, of course it does.
This is the biggest part of me now.
And, you know, I'm really sorry that I can't come to your, you know, whatever it is in New York, but I have to be around for my kids.
Yeah.
Or guess what? I am coming to New York because I've got a babysitter.
Yeah,
isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
You know, and so many of my clients have got children.
Yeah.
And that's a lovely thing as well, because I tend to leave the office slightly earlier, go and, you know, when I'm back at work, go and get her, get them sorted, and then once they're in bed, I work in the evening.
Mm.
And for some of my clients, it's easier to talk at 8 o'clock because they've got kids as well.
Because they're in the same situation,
you know. And I think there is a sort of mutual. I find there's a mutual respect for the some. You know, when you're on the phone and there's a child in the background.
Yeah.
I remember Marnie must have been quite small, picking her up from nursery, and I had a conference call, and trying to do a deal for one of my clients, and I'm a bit of a I'm very strict about sugar for her. I was like, would you like an ice cream, darling?
Having
her in her buggy, giving her an ice cream and having my earphones in and sort of walking around the park, just trying to, you know.
And in your head, you're like, I am buying this. And I have bought this,
like,
from her.
It was like $1 million, like trying to close a $1 million deal while trying to pacify my child. And what was brilliant was I'd said to them at the beginning, look, just so you know, I'm with my daughter. I hope it's not a distraction. Yeah. And it was with a lawyer and an American manager or someone. And they were like, don't worry, we've got kids. It's fine. And I remember coming off the phone, having, you know, got what we wanted to get, and just being like, yes, you can have it all.
Yeah.
And then looking at her and she's obviously like
covered in ice cream and like a sugar haze.
That was interesting. But why do we talk about something else now?
Were you ever in a situation where you were negotiating? Because I've talked to lots of people about, you know, having to negotiate things in their contract, either people having to take very small babies on set, or I spoke to Paul Reddy, who had a best endeavours thing written into his contract because his partner was pregnant. And, you know, has the way that you've dealt with all of that now with an understanding, you know, were you...
Totally changed. So, I remember talking to Daisy Haggard about when she, you know, went straight back to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And being stunned, but also really impressed by how it was handled. And I had a similar situation with a client of mine who was offered this great job and she'd just had a baby.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, with... producer and the casting director saying, look, she really wants to do it, but this is what she needs. And it was so detailed to the you know, if she has an early call, because her mum went with her, because her husband, who was also an actor, was in the States. If she has a really early call in the morning, you need to then send another car later to pick up her mother and her baby, and the cars have to have ISOFIX, you know, and all of this is in the contract, because you and I both know that it's all well and good, but if the car hasn't got the right, you know, attachments for the car seat, it's useless.
And this was after you'd had Marnie, that you were able to kind of...
and really understand, you know, she needs to have breaks every, I can't remember what it was now, 3 hours to either breastfeed or express.
Yeah.
She needs to have, her trailer needs to be as close to set as possible so that there's no time wasted in that, you know, in that journey. She needs a fridge. She needs, you know, and it was sort of a big trailer because her mum and her son will probably just be there
hanging
because
out
he was
there.
A tiny baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And the production was so on board and it worked brilliantly. And it was really important to me, not only that we did it, but that we did it
well
contractually.
Yes, right, okay.
Because then you have a precedent.
Yeah.
And then you can say, well, look, this is what we did with so-and-so. So this, we can just slip that out of that contract into this contract going forward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was brilliant. And I think we are now definitely living in a time where
that's understood.
People are much more understanding about it.
Do you you probably, I don't know if you can remember or even admit to it, but like, do you ever remember a time where you thought, oh God, I'm going to have to do this? Or people just didn't ask for it before? Or
I definitely think before you have children, you just don't get...
No, that's what
I
mean.
You just don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do remember, I can't think of specific examples, but definitely there have been times where someone sort of said, oh, you know, well, I can't do that because it's my kid's birthday. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, they're three. They don't. But I can't imagine missing one of my children's birthdays. But of course that's important.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I say in my professional life, you know, I won't be in the office tomorrow because, you know, whatever, it's Marnie's karate grading or whatever it is, people get it.
Yeah.
And rather than pretending that you're working from home, when actually you're not working from home because you're at your kid's concert, and you can't...
And that's fine. That's
exactly
good, you know, yeah.
But, it's really important to me that if clients need whatever they need, you know, that it's accommodated by productions. And I think productions can't be seen not to be helpful.
Now. Yeah.
Hello? Is it a microphone?
I am quite a confident person. And I feel like there's lots of things that people have said to me or things that I've read where I've just gone, oh, no. But I can also see that women who are not so confident get bombarded with so much advice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you don't have the confidence to look at it and analyse it and think, no, that's not for me, that's rubbish.
Yeah, yeah.
It must be really overwhelming.
Yeah, totally.
And quite and also scary,
to learn. I think it's really important, like one of the most important parts of parenting is gaining confidence as a mother or mm-hmm. father or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, so once you've made enough decisions, you start kind of going, oh yeah, this tends to work if I do it like this, or for me and for them and blah, blah. Whereas if you're not ever having to make decisions because you're just reading everything out of a book, then it's not, it's not going to help you.
And that thing that happens when you're out and about, you know, and again, second child, if we've been in Waitrose and Grayson's screaming his head off, I'd sort of just, I'm like, well, okay, he's a baby, sorry.
Yeah, totally.
And you sort of get, you know, is he okay? I'm like,
oh, God.
But what I found recently, which has been so amazing, is I was at the checkout and he's screaming and this woman just came and went, do you want me to just rock him for you?
Mm,
I was like,
yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, I really do. That is so kind
of
you.
A solution. That I think there's a lot of, and actually, weirdly, it's often older women who've forgotten, and actually all they're doing is saying something like, oh, he's probably tired, or he's probably hungry, or he's whatever. And your state, they've forgotten that in your state, what you hear is, you should have given him a proper nap this morning. Mm. You should have fed him before you came.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you hear. And they're not saying that. They're kind of going, oh, I've forgotten what that's like. And they, oh, it's probably that. They're just like absentmindedly saying it out loud. But no one ever just goes. I remember being in situations where, especially early on with two babies, essentially. And often on my own in like social situations where the majority of my friends had two parents and one child. And it was, this is you. Yeah. And you know, and I'd be kind of like, I remember being at a sort of party and my children were going up and down the stairs and were completely fine going up and down the stairs because they've kind of had to learn how to do that. And one mother turned to me and went, are they all right going up? You know, kind of pointed to them, are they all right going up the stairs? And I just thought, fuck you, man. Like, A, yes.
They're fine.
But B, you're not saying, you could have said that in a different way. Mm. You could have said, do you want me to go and get, is she all right there? Shall I go and get her down or something like that? It was just like, do you think you should be? It's like, oh my God.
But that's why you have to choose your friends so carefully. Like this morning, it was brilliant. So one of my friends has got a daughter the year above Marnie at the same school.
Yeah.
And I walked into the playground and she went, oh, give him to me. She just took Grayson off.
Right,
and, you know, and I'm like, yep, fine, off you go. You know, and it's there's that thing of finding your tribe. Especially when you've got kids. And there are people that I'm not really friends with anymore, just because their views on parenting are quite mesh with mine, or they're just not, I don't know, everything
it's
changes,
important.
The dynamic changes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've made this sort of really great new group of friends through ballet and nursery and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so easy and natural and organic. Yeah. And what I love is that, A, we all have permission to, like, tell each other's kids off if we need to. Do you know what I mean? Like, that thing if you see Marnie misbehaving, feel free.
Don't,
not to an extreme, but we're all very similar. But also that thing of someone will just pick up your baby.
Yeah.
We were at a party on the weekend and there was a lot of politics going on in the face painting queue.
Right.
So I had to deal with that. And then he was tired and my friend was just outside, just pushing him in the pram. And she went, oh, he's asleep now. You know, it's like, that's what you need.
Is
people that just get it and just take your child for a minute or push them in a buggy or deal with a snotty nose or anything.
Yes, they don't go, oh, he's got a snotty nose. Yeah. They get a tissue and wipe
it. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, these are my people.
Yeah.
So important.
Thank you so much to the wonderful Sarah Camlett for talking to me. That was just fascinating. I'm going to take a little hiatus in August because I am making a show for Radio 4. Listen out for that. It's called Alex Edelman's Special Relationships, and it's a discussion show between US and UK comedians, musicians, all kinds of cool people talking about all kinds of cool things. I'm going to have to be able to summarise that better nearer the time. I'm also moving house and going on holiday, so I just couldn't really do it all. So the next episode, which will come out in September sometime, will be the presenter Kirsten O'Brien. I recorded that a few weeks ago, and oh, it's really funny. She told me a brilliant story off mic, unfortunately, so I will tell you it here, where she was talking about cleaning up. She's talking about one of her children shitting all over the house, was her words. I don't know if she means that literally, but she was definitely in the mire. And she said, I used to clean up my child had been shitting all over the house. I was trying to clear it up, and my dad walked in saying, the tread on your car tyres is illegal. Perfect. Anyway, more from Kirsten next month. I hope you have a wonderful August and enjoy your summer holidays, and I'll see you then.
Bye-bye.